21 mistakes caregivers make and how to avoid them. Solutions and strategies to reduce stress and increase happiness. Tony Claire Gittles, heartofcaregiving.com. It's Wednesday, September 20th, 2023. Hi, Tony. You're having a major media day.
I know.
Book launch day of your gorgeous book.
Hi. It did come out nice, didn't it?
It did come out nice. Yes, Tony. We're just going to be getting started here in a couple of minutes. Hi, Jessica.
Good afternoon.
She's got an amazing book that she was inspired to write about her experience with. It was your mom, right?
Yeah, she was living with mixed dementia.
I see the word caregiver in the background there.
Proact. Oh, very good.
My podcast set. Yeah.
Oh, you have a podcast. Wow. Are you still caring for your mom?
Sadly, no. She passed this last April. She also had congestive heart failure. And as the stages of dementia progressed, I was told that she would more likely pass from congestive heart failure, which was the case.
How old was she?
She was 73. She had just reached her 73rd birthday. And I know, very young. She had early onset dementia.
Wow. Yeah. I'm 73.
Well, you look great.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm still here. Yay.
I was curious. I thought, oh my gosh, I bet I've made several of those. We all do.
When I told one person what the title was, they went, only 21? I went, no, I just had to stop somewhere.
Right.
I'm sure there's more. Well, you know, and that was the whole thing that, you know, we're not really trained to do this job, and we have to, and we have to figure it out, and we're smart, and we eventually figure it out, but, you know, how can we just change the learning curve and make it easy, you know, easier? Teresa said on the last interview I was on, she said, why should it be so hard? We have to make it easier for people. Because it's hard enough, even though every case is different, there are some general things we learn as we go through it.
Well, and sometimes we have to go through those hard lessons because we'll avoid the easy route just the same. But if we don't have to, let's learn how.
There were a couple things I learned after Mom died, you know, that kind of reflected on the whole experience.
Right.
You know, and the first thing was, this should have been easier. Should have been easier. There should have been a way I had the information that I needed. And the other thing was, wouldn't it have been nice if I had someone who had been through a caregiving experience?
Exactly.
And I could talk to them, you know, when I needed help or just to work things out. So I became a certified caregiver consultant. I found there was a program, and it was for people that were currently or former caregivers, because they had to have the experience. That was a requirement. And then she did a great job training us and giving us materials to work from.
I wish that was available to the public more easily for them to find it, because I came across something similar. And so I got certified as a dementia practitioner.
Yeah.
And I use that in my consulting, but I known early on that something like that was available, I definitely would have gone in that route a lot sooner.
Yeah. And in fact, the woman I work with, or that, you know, I'm certified with, is Denise Brown, Denise M. Brown. And she's been in caregiving for probably 30 years now, long time. And she's written quite a few books. There's Teresa. But she has started programs for caregivers, you know, not to be a consultant. Oh my God, look what you did.
That's awesome.
She's my media marketing guru. Oh my God,
look at you. Sorry, Tony, keep going. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh my God, you are so full of surprises. Teresa worked with me on the book, start to finish. Some of your words are in there. Some of the sentences you changed. It's like, I think Teresa said that. And it, we're
inspired
talking
with, by you, Tony. All inspired by you.
So good. Thank you. Yeah, I was telling Jessica about Denise's program, you know, and that she has not just certifying us to be consultants, but has reached out to the caregiver community, you know, for access to information. But again, but people have to find her.
You know, exactly.
It's the same problem, you know, but the resources are there. So, and I didn't know about you. So, you know, there are resources now. And really 20 years ago, there weren't a lot of resources.
Most hospitals have bookshops, right? Or gift shops. This could be in every gift shop and hospital.
Yes. Yes, especially because you don't know what you don't know until you're in the moment and then going, how do I find out? How do I
wait? Isn't that one of my book chapter titles? You don't know what you don't know. Wait a minute. Did you read my book?
That's too funny.
It is. Yes, I haven't memorized my book yet. You don't know what you don't know. That's the section three.
Oh, how funny.
Three. Not shifting your mindset, not knowing your responsibilities, not speaking up to authority. So good. So you got a head start. You're my ideal target market. So go buy the book and share it with your caregivers. You wrote a book about your caregiving experience.
Right. I went on the other end of it where I was focused on trying to prevent versus, because every time I went to a support group, I met so many different caregivers that would ask the same questions and they would describe the same situations. Mm-hmm. And then I started to observe my mother and really get into her history. And that's when I realized, this isn't genetic. My mother was one of 10. And out of 10 children, she was a twin. Her twin was perfectly fine. And she had other siblings that had different forms of dementia or nothing at all. So it was like piecemeal. And so I wrote the book to be more of that proactive to prevent for the caregivers to stay healthy and strong while they're still caring for their loved ones.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. That's kind of where I was coming from.
Well, that's good. Is your book on Amazon?
It is. It is.
Okay. I'm going to go get it.
The Proactive Caregiver.
Okay. Jessica Cannon. And okay.
After I had written that, I had so many people ask me, what's proactive?
Hello.
Okay. Let me just gift the book to you right now. I have a feeling you're going to be reacting to life. That was the subtitle. Stop reacting to life. Start living proactively.
Goal. You do great work on social media. I follow you. I didn't realize.
Oh, really?
Together. Oh, yeah. The Proactive Caregiver. Yeah.
I thought your name looked familiar, but I wasn't sure.
Sustainable caregiving. And then.
Yes.
Yes, really nice to meet you virtually. That's awesome. No, I share and I love all your work. So
awesome. That's awesome. Thank you. I appreciate that. We'll definitely have to have you, Tony, on the podcast so that you can talk about your book. It's
Yes.
It is turned into lessons learned to share for other caregivers because, like you said, a long time ago there weren't a lot of resources. And even though there's more resources now, it seems like it's harder to understand them or find them or get to them.
Sure.
My friend Daphne has just arrived from British Columbia.
Hello, Lynn. Yes, and I will come on as I'm able. I'm just needing to be that way for now.
Sure, that's fine.
Thank you.
We put together 21 Mistakes Caregivers Make and How to Avoid Them workbook.
Good.
There's an action plan at the end of each chapter. So people can take a sheet of paper. There's not really a lot of space to write in the book. We wound up not leaving a lot of space. But, you know, I'm a person that's got to put it down on paper. And
me too.
So Teresa came up with a beautiful companion workbook for us.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's just going to be offered digitally right now.
Hey, welcome, Doris. There's Nancy. Hi, Nancy. My name is Lynn Thompson. I'm the host and producer of Living on Purpose, also known as the On Purpose podcast. And I am so delighted that Toni Gittles is with us today because it's her launch day for her beautiful 21 Mistakes Caregivers Make.
Woohoo!
Yay. Yeah. And we have some great people on here. It's so nice to have you all with us. And Teresa is just an incredible assistant. Well, more than an assistant. She's a leader in her field of design and intelligence, helping Toni for quite a while. And I've been delighted to get to know you, Teresa. And I've met Jessica recently. I'm so glad to meet you. You're just such a great resource. And that's so cool that you and Teresa have been aware of each other. Nancy Marshall, another author I've been pleased to collaborate with. Both Tony and Nancy have been published, their books have been published with Becky Norwood of Spotlight Publishing House. And Daphne is a friend of mine from British Columbia, who's an incredible caregiver. We're really looking forward to hearing from you, Daphne. And Doris, I don't know you, but welcome to the call. And Tony, 9 months since we were introduced. How are you feeling today on your launch day?
Yeah, 9 months. That's amazing, isn't it? And of course, I've been working on the book much longer than that, but really focus with you. It's exciting. I feel like it's like one of the most exciting weeks of my life, that a lot of my life, my career, you know, you don't know where life is going to take you. And I never would have imagined this, writing a book on caregiving, being a caregiver for my mother for 14 years. But, you know, I look for opportunities and go the direction I'm led. So here I am today, and I have some advanced copy books. So I have to admit, I've been selling some here locally, and people are very excited about it. And I'm excited when they give me money. So, you know, that's fun to have a product like that, that people can see and touch and get some information out of. So yes, it's a wonderful day, and really have been out networking a lot in person, which is great to be able to do that. But COVID opened up virtual programs and networking and opportunities to reach more people. So that's really exciting.
That's the thing about your book. It's just so practical. And there's so many people who are, they go, oh, I guess I'm a caregiver, you know, like, and I think that's part of what's going on, and people recognizing that's what they're doing, and that there's actual guidance available. And like you said, well, you've said in the book, you didn't have that when you were entering all those years with your mom, not knowing how many years it would be even, right?
Right. And you certainly don't think it's going to be 14 years. Yeah. I remember going to Rosalind Carter's website, her Institute for Caregivers, and there was information there. I think it was on her website that the average length of time someone cares for an individual is 7 years. And I was like at the 2 year mark. And I thought, oh my goodness, 7 years, this is going to be a long journey. And then it was much longer. But a lot of the information in the book, and I want to say hi to Theta. I know Theta. Hi, sweetie. She's in Florida. A lot of the information in the book, you know, I learned as I went along. No one was there to tell me this, and I didn't identify with the word caregiver because it's just not in your vocabulary, right? Unless you've started at an early age, you've cared for someone in your family, and I didn't. You know, I was the dutiful daughter, the only child, the person that was available to take care of my mother, and I did it with love, not at the beginning. I did it with hard work at the beginning. And then I realized love was kind of missing. I was underestimating the value of the to-do versus the being with my mother and having a good time with her as much as she could. Yeah, a lot of things certainly that I learned, you know, and I called them mistakes. They're really lessons learned, a lot of life lessons. You know, I was in my late 50s when I started taking care of my mom. So I had some good life experience behind me. And I noticed I really used it in my caregiving experience. I used what I had learned about happiness to really shift my thinking about being with my mother and enjoying the moment, living in the moment. We only have this moment. People know that, but do they reflect on that? Do they take advantage of the moment? I'm like enjoying this day. I'm so present to everything that's going on, to every email, to every person that's talking to me. It's like, well, I need to do this every day because life is really magical. And there are magic moments in caregiving, no matter what the circumstances are. I started looking for those magic moments, or I started thinking, how can I create those magic moments with my mom? I didn't want a dull day, you know, or a dull experience. I wanted to live life fully. And it is difficult when you're caring for someone. And I know that now because I have health issues of my own. And I wake up in pain And it's hard to be happy, and it's hard to be focused, and it's hard to look forward to the day. You know, so I'm on the other side now, maybe learning what mom was going through a little bit and realizing too, maybe I should have had a little more compassion. I had an experience when I get ready to go out, if it's in the morning, I take a long time because I'm not moving quickly and I've got to wait for that Tylenol to kick in and help me move faster. And I used to not have very good patience with my mother. It's like, what's taking you so long to get ready? We have a doctor's appointment. You know, we have to get there. What can I do to help you? Why aren't you dressed? You know, and it took time. I mean, she was in her 80s and 90s. And my goodness, she was energetic and pretty well put together mentally. These physical activities took time. So now I understand that. And patience is really something a lot of caregivers have trouble with, because life moves so fast. It's just normally moving so fast, but we have to adjust our schedules. And again, if you're in the moment, you realize things don't happen the way you're expecting them to. We have expectations about how things should go. And when they don't work out, it's aggravating and it causes a reaction.
I can sort of see the parallel between the toddler with the snowsuit that needs to, you know, be put on, and then, you know, going out to the bank with my elder friend, and like, you need to adapt, right? And find out the ways to be in the moment and enjoy it, not be wanting to get out of that moment to a different moment to be happier or something, right?
Right. Yeah. And as the caregiver, you're the one that has to adjust. The person you're caring for is not likely to adjust to your expectations. And, you know, that was one thing I learned, to give her space, to let her be independent when she could be with what she could do. I tried to do everything for her at the beginning because I thought that's what I was supposed to do. Well, let me get you coffee, or let me do this for you. And she's like, I can do it. You know, and I didn't realize I was taking away the last thread of her independence.
So when you turn it around, and the idea of you, of me, of any of us needing that help, then it gives you, you know, right away you think, well, I don't want somebody doing that for me. But then at the same time, where is that line? Like, when do we decide that, and when do we graciously yeah. accept help? How do we thoughtfully provide help as an option, not as you have to do it my way, or let me do that for you and you have no choice? Like, that's tricky, right?
Well, it's tricky. And I think the answer has to be, you have to have a conversation about it and you have to explore it. And I don't think we know the answers when we start the conversation. We have to be curious about, how can I help you? How can you help me? So what do you think? You know, and it may be, I don't know. But when you're talking to someone, you think of things, you think of ideas. If you were just to sit on your own and say, what help do I need today? Or how can I ask for help? You might come up with something. I mean, at this point, if you're an experienced caregiver, you would come up with some things. My care partner is always asking me, what do you need today? What can I do for you today? And I'm like stumped. And I'm like, well, you can always give me a hug. You can always rub my back a little bit, my shoulders, and you can give me a kiss before you leave. And I think I'm good with that. You know, other days I need more help because my mobility is affected and I'm not moving. So I might need help, you know, get something out of the closet for me, get my clothes, get my shoes, and that would make it easier. So, you know, it depends. But I know my mother was not good at asking for help and thinking of things. I have a section in the book on asking for help. I don't know how detailed it is. I hope I put some ideas on what you can ask for, because it is important and we're not used to it. You know, some people have a problem asking for help because they have a belief system that they should be able to do it, or it minimizes who they are and their abilities. So they're going to try to keep doing things themselves. So I don't have that problem. I'm fine asking for help. I just don't know what to ask for. I'm still figuring that out.
It's like a wish list.
Yeah, a wish list.
Sometimes, though, it's not just you asking for help, but you asking for help to help you, right? Like,
right. So you're receiving help, because we can give and give and give, and then we're tired. or exhausted. We need things too. My mother was so sweet. She would always say, I wish I could do your laundry. I wish I could come over and cook for you. You know, and she just really was not able to do that much. And what she could do for me was to be a good companion mom. I mean, she was still mom. She could love me. She could hug me. We could talk. We could sit and watch TV together. We could read a book together. That's important stuff. I mean, that's relating. I actually put a book together a long time ago with a book of questions to ask your parents or to ask a family member. And I got out that book and we sat with it. And there were like almost 500 questions. So wow. She told me we pretty much got her life story. A lot of questions didn't trigger a memory, but you know, I wrote down the stories she told me. I mean, that was really special because you don't know people that well, even if they're family members, because we go different directions and we're not with them all the time. But having those conversations to me was one of the most important things and the best times. Mom enjoyed it. Mom, I'm back in her life, and she told me all the good stories.
I always find that fascinating to imagine my parents before I knew them, before I showed up, you know. I'm thinking, like, there's different kinds of caregiving, like 14 years with your mom, and we can imagine that is kind of your standard kind of caregiving situation. Daphne here, who I know, she's been a caregiver for her son who's autistic and doesn't speak. You know, so that's like a whole different kind of caregiving. Daphne, if you're there, I believe he's in his late 20s now. Is that right?
Yes, Down syndrome and autism. And he's 20. He'll be 27 in a couple of weeks.
27.
Yeah.
What would you say is the most challenging aspect of caregiving for you?
I almost don't know how to answer that question. I think that one of the most challenging things is when, okay, how to say this? It's a world, it's a landscape that you're walking in all the time. I'm a single mom, so I've been doing this on my own for 27 years. And even the notion of caregiving, it's strangely one-sided because it can make it feel as though, because it is full out care. He doesn't chew. There's personal care options. So I'm taking care of that. And yet what I receive back is so extraordinary on another way of being in relationship with the world. So life itself becomes the practice of presence, my presence. I remember one morning where he'd had a very difficult night. I hadn't realized that. Things were pouring out of every orifice when I arrived in his little room in the morning across the hall. And I'm cleaning him up. I'm cleaning up the room. And I'm feeling to my absolute heart that if I am unable to achieve enlightenment in this moment, then this is what I am full of. You know, it's like whatever comes is the medicine. Whatever you meet is a key to something exquisite that you'll learn about yourself, about life. It's hard. It's hard in the sense that it asks a lot. And I think one of the most significant things that I know it's asked of me is to truly find the ground in groundlessness, because there is no solid ground and things can change in a moment, and how to meet that moment. I might finally be able to make a plan. I was able to go away for 2 nights for the first time in over 3 years because I finally was able to have someone watch him overnight. And I know that built into that is it could change in a heartbeat, and that won't happen. So it's one's own ability to recalibrate. And for me, it's about allowing my heart to break over and over again, knowing that it's breaking open all the time. There's more light coming in. There's more. People say, well, you've given up so much to do this. I had him when I was 43. I just turned 70. It's like, oh my gosh, may I stay strong and healthy throughout. But it has been an extraordinary life. Would I have consciously chosen it? No. Would it have been on my wish list of things? But if my soul were asking that question, it would have said, open arms, open heart to receive this being into my life because of what I have been gifted to experience as a result.
Thank you, Daphne. Daphne is a beautiful soul, and she gets what is going on for her life and is taking full advantage of it. And it has to be very hard as well, ongoingly. That's many years.
All of it is true. Yeah.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Thank you, Daphne.
Yeah, there are so many stories, caregiving stories, that they're all really unique in how people experience the care and the individual and the circumstances, the people around them is really different. Everybody who's a caregiver, all 53 million people could write a story and it would sound a little bit different because they would approach it differently and experience the person differently. There's people that don't get involved in it, who could be having an experience of caring for someone in their family, and they refuse to do that. So that's interesting to me too, that people don't participate. Some not at all. Some as well as they can because of distance. You know, we're really a country of caregivers. We really are. And caring for ourselves is included in that. And some of us don't do that too well. When you get a cold, someone's caring for you and buying you Kleenex. You get through it, so it's very short term. It's, you know, it's hardly noticed. But the more I think about it, it's like we really need to teach every human about caring for themselves and for other people and become a more caring and kind society and culture. And I think we're quite far away from that at this point in life. But as caregivers, as former caregivers, as future caregivers, we can tell our story and we can impact the people around us and in our life. And I think that's one of the things that I'm trying to do with the book. I can do it one-on-one, I can do it in my educational seminars, but I think a book can be very powerful and can reach a lot of people, even if they read one or two chapters. And one or two chapters may be all they need to get through a difficult situation. So other people may not make all these mistakes. I mean, some people may have all their legal documents in order. This is great. You should do that. Some people may have all the medical history written out and available for the person that's caring for them and in a place where it goes to the hospital with them. It goes to the doctor appointments with them. And that's great. There's a lot of work that can be done with my book. There's a lot of content in there, but a lot of opportunity for people to reflect on what their experience is and what they want it to be. And what I got from you, Daphne, is my chapter on celebrating life, celebrating the people in your life. Why don't we do that? You know, why wait for a birthday? Why wait for one of those designated times to celebrate? This is your life every day. There can be no ordinary moments if you choose to make them extraordinary. And that's what I tried to do with my mother too. It was very interesting because I never thought I was a very creative person, but I thought of all these creative things to do for my mom to make her happy and to make her feel good. And I was surprised. And that was like, oh, I can do this. I'm really a creative person. So you learn so much about yourself when you're in a caregiving experience, if you're paying attention, right? But you have to pay attention.
Well, thank you, Tony. I just want to ask if anyone else has something they'd like to comment or question for Tony or in the discussion.
I'd like to say that I really can relate to Daphne. I have a Down syndrome daughter who spent most of her life in group homes, was very happy there, but she now has Alzheimer's. And she has diabetes. And when she was in the hospital 2 years ago, we had her released to, my husband and I took her home and we had her for 2 years. She's now in a medical group home, which is wonderful. And she likes it there too. We had to do that because I have been diagnosed with cancer. So I am about to be care
receiver. So I'm seeing both sides of this. And I would just like to say that our time with Molly was really enhanced by the state of Arizona, who has come up with just tremendous amount of help for people who are caregivers. And we had 107 hours of assistance that we could use. Well, it's a little hard to find people to fill those hours. Plus we had 39 hours, that was a week. And I have 39 hours a week of skilled nursing as well. But trying to find people is very difficult. But the state of Arizona allowed me to apply for the job. So I took all kinds of caregiving classes from the state of Arizona. It's really unusual here that people are moving here to get this kind of care. Wow. I don't know where your states are, everybody, but you need to, I mean, there needs to be a movement started to get help from, well, Molly's is from, well, let's see, she's with the Department of Economic Security, Department of Developmental Disabilities, and they've been funded for this. So I don't know how you guys, what states you're in, but it's something to be aware of, that there's a good way to do this, and some states don't do anything, I guess.
Yeah, well, if Arizona has a model, we should learn about that and start becoming advocates.
Yes, before you become care receivers, that might be part of your mission, to look into whatever your state is doing and find out why they can't do more.
Right. I'm in Florida, and there are some advocacy groups here, especially for dementia, and they have made some progress with state laws. You know, COVID just disrupted everything, especially the memory care facilities and the lovely families that had loved ones in those facilities, especially when COVID spread through them. It was a very difficult time for everyone, but we have a new law now that family members can visit during a crisis situation like that. And they were not allowed to visit their loved ones, and that caused a deterioration in the condition of people. It was a very tough time. That's great information.
Yeah, thank you, Doris. Jessica, did you have something to contribute?
Yes, I think it's wonderful that caregivers are able to learn from books like this, because one of the main struggles we have is identifying as caregiver, because we come to this as spouse or daughter or son or family member. And so it takes us a long time before, like, I'm just doing these special favors for them. I'm just helping out. And we don't see ourselves as caregivers until it becomes a consistent routine. I only wanted to do this for so long, or I only wanted to do these few things, and now I'm thrown into all of it. Because I know what I experienced with my mother is, the more I did for her, the less she did for herself. And the more I felt the need to be there and fill in those gaps for her, one of my biggest challenges was not getting lost in it, not losing my identity of, who am I? Now I'm not just daughter, but I am her banker. I am her hair salon. I am her housekeeper. I am her yard maintenance. I am all of these things. And I stopped feeling like daughter or even friend.
Right.
And so I'm in Texas, and we actually have an event this coming weekend inviting caregivers to contribute their stories, because that became one of our models. One of my company models is, we can change the world one story at a time. And they're trying to prepare something that goes towards legislative changes, because had it not been for COVID, the spotlight wouldn't have been shown on these areas. And exactly. When I started hearing so many others saying, when COVID caused the shutdown and then I couldn't see my mother, we had just moved her into a community. Mm-hmm. And within 3 months, 4 months, everything was shut down. And so had it not been for that, and then my family coming home and my son completing school from home and even starting college from home, and my husband had to come remote work and all that stuff. And I thought it was a change for me. It was a good change for me, because as a caregiver, I had already felt isolated. And now at that point, then people started talking about caregiver isolation. I thought, I've been in this for years. I have been isolated for years, disconnected from the world, and now it's recognized, which thankfully, that's the only way I could look at COVID. It was sad, but thankfully, caregivers got a spotlight finally to see how we have been somewhat, because of our love and responsibility to our loved ones, we've been removed from society in a way that keeps us from connecting to others. And that was my challenge of hanging on to that identity, but at the same time, still staying connected with the outside world.
Good conversation. I mean, that was one of the positives, you know, and that we were able to get on Zoom. Zoom got popular.
Right.
We got to visit with people that we would not ordinarily meet. We got to join support groups that we did not know about.
Right.
We don't have to travel. Yeah, Teresa.
Yeah, Teresa, go ahead.
Jessica, all of that sounds so familiar. I called the COVID period isolation 2.0 because as a caregiver, I already felt isolated. And just like you, in some ways, it felt like I wasn't missing out because everybody was missing out. So it was, it just really was an interesting perspective. But Tony, you know, having been with you and with Lynn from the beginning of this journey of your book, I can tell you so many times I thought how amazing this would have been to have had my kid for my dad, because I was caring for him through the pandemic before, and he passed in December 2020 at 99. So just went through all of the challenges of feeling overwhelmed and out of control. And I love that your book speaks to the conversations. Like, think back, if I had had these conversations with dad, I wouldn't have been so resentful. I would have known what we would have been a team, you know, in a different way at the beginning. There wouldn't have been so much conflict. And I love, Tony, that you said you and your mom didn't really have that conflict. Well, we did. Dad and I had a lot of conflict. You know, his stubbornness and desire for independence, and I respect that so much now, but at the time, my concern over his safety just created all of this turmoil. So the conversations that you recommend, I think that's just such a gift. And then the self-care. So self-care wasn't on my radar, and not being aware of how to take care of myself while caring for dad resulted in me becoming completely burned out. So again, I think it's such a gift to caregivers. And then finally, I just want to say, I love the chapter on celebrating love, because as I read it a few times, just working with it and coming up with images and this and that, like, it still brings tears to my eyes, still thinking about it, not because I have regrets, but I just appreciate so much now and have so much gratitude for that part of the journey. And I know that when caregivers read your book, it's going to be something that they can start thinking about in a different way, and connecting with their family member in a different way. And then they're going to have memories they can cherish forever. So I just want to thank you for writing your book, and I'm so happy to just be a part of it. And again, be connected with Lynn. That's been so special too. So yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. I really focused on creating memories. You know, you said that with mom. You know, it was a special time. I had time. She was my focus. I didn't set enough boundaries, though, to have a little bit more of a social life, because this was all before COVID, and I could have, but I did not disconnect completely from my friends and my community. So that was a good thing. And the other words that came up were, I don't want to have any regrets when she dies. I want to know I did the best I could, and that she had the best life possible. At times that felt like a heavy responsibility, but she was cooperative most of the time, and she so enjoyed. She had two wishes in her life. One was to be married, to find her Prince Charming, and she did. And the other was to have a child. You know, she could only have one child, but she loved me to death. She just loved me like crazy, and she wanted, she willed herself to 99, because she almost died three times. And she kept saying, I came back to spend more time with you. And in a way, it was like, really? We're not done yet? What's that going to look like? Welcome back. I'm glad you're here. And then I think she just got exhausted. She had some pain that couldn't be treated, couldn't be relieved. And she looked tired, and she agreed to having some medication that put her in a mild coma so that she would be out of pain. You know, and that's beautiful too. She was ready to go and she knew it. And there was a way to make that happen. I mean, she died naturally. She didn't die from the medication, but it gave her peace at the end of her life. And she woke up to say goodbye to me the very last night, the night she died. She woke up out of the coma and hugged me and knew who I was. And it was really special.
That's a blessing.
Yeah.
Thank you. Daphne, you had a question or a comment?
Yes, I did. And been really appreciating what's been said. And my mom moved out to Vancouver Island here, and she was here for 10 years. And I was her primary caregiver for that time as well. And it was full out. She was in a care facility, but I was visit pretty much every day and be the one, as one of you has said, who did all the work out in the world on her behalf, etc., and watching over her health and her med situation. And she died just before her 100th birthday. It was fascinating. And I have to admit that when COVID hit and I wasn't able to go and visit her in the care home, I was relieved that I got a bit of a break, because it wasn't me. And I had to really look at, okay, I just couldn't say no to the responsibility of that, because she deserved it. She was my mom. She was as good spirited as she could. And then it sort of turned a bit towards the end, but it was really great for me that for a while there, I was not able to go and see her. So I was able to take a bit more time for myself at that point on that one hand. And, you know, Lynn, just reflecting a little bit on that question you asked, what's the hardest part of the caregiving? And I think one of the hardest things is the isolation that I find in my world with my son. I'm left out of a lot of things out in the world. It's challenging to be out in the world. And sometimes when you're out in the world with someone who's very, very different, and you just want to go in the store and buy bread and leave, and you don't want every moment to be a teaching moment, you know, for someone, I want to be able to be present to anyone who does have questions or curiosities, or even the incoming energies that I feel that aren't favorable ones in this world where we're often very afraid of difference. And some days I'm really there for it, and others it's like I just want to crumble and I'll make probably a decision just to turn around and go back home. But it is interesting how, if you're not out in the world doing things in the community a lot, how quickly you can be forgotten in a sense. And you have to almost fight, that's not the right word, but to really claim your place in the community, where it seems like it's disappearing from you. So you have to cultivate that core friendships with people who, I mean, I don't have anyone even in my family who's able to sort of be in my life with my son in an easy way. I appreciate that. Everyone has their own journey with it, but it's tough. That part of it is tough. Yeah.
Over your lifetime, have you cultivated some friendships, some relationships that you can either reestablish or just have a friend to talk to?
Absolutely do. I mean, I have some really, really, I have some soul friends that are, they're just right there. And you don't need a lot of them. But, you know, when you have that, it's quality over quantity sometimes. Mm-hmm. I'm very, very blessed in that, and that how important that is. A place to celebrate and a place to cry.
Yeah, one of the chapters in the book is about building your community, your care community, and who is in it. And sometimes we don't even realize who could be in it. The person that mows my lawn, he can be very friendly and he can stop the lawnmower and we can chat for a while. And if I'm feeling like I just need some friendship or companionship, because I do sit at home a lot and work, you know, it's nice to just go outside and visit. And I have neighbors that walk up and down the street that I can visit with. They don't know my whole life story. They don't know my situation, but many have met my mother. It really doesn't matter who it is if they're willing to chat with you. It's refreshing. And we need the relationships. We need people in our life. And it can be that small a thing that's who they are. Yeah. And the lifelong friendships are good. I noticed that as a caregiver, during that time, I needed to reach out to people very few people called me and said, what can I do? Even though they knew my mother, they knew me, they knew I was in a situation. And I had a big community and I still have that community, but the caregiver has to do all the work, it seems, and invite people in to your life to participate. But it can be done, and it's worthwhile.
If I can just add one thing from what you said, Tony, that yes, for me too, it's about cultivating those, I call them micro moments, that opportunities are everywhere. And honestly, I turn going into town to buy my groceries or go to the bank into a wonderful opportunity to connect with anybody, with strangers, just make it a moment. And I'll come back from town going, why? I feel so replenished and it, you know, so good. And it's so subtle, but it's just letting the world all the way in, taking advantage of the smallest of opportunities. And that is really ultimately about cultivating community. These may be people you never see again, but you leave something of yourself and you receive something so beautiful when we're just kind of connecting like that in the simplest of ways.
You remind me that I teach happiness. I'm a happiness trainer. And I had a book come out, an anthology in 2004 on happiness before it was a popular topic. Mm-hmm. And I would teach people to be happiness ambassadors. And all that meant was smile at people. Talk to people as you're checking out in your grocery store. You may make someone's day. You have no idea. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I always say, especially at the end of the day, people at the checkout stand in the grocery store, they'll say, well, how are you? And I'll say, I'm fine, but I have a feeling you've been standing all day. How are you? You know, and they just laugh and they go, well, I get off soon. I'm fine. So, you know, it just brings a little joy, a little change in their environment to be that way. So we could be friendly. Yeah, I love what you said, Daphne. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, thank you, Daphne, very much. And I just wanted to say that I've been sharing heart cards with people as I go through my day for over 23 years now. And here's a nice message for everybody.
You have a magical touch.
That's neat.
Anybody else want to contribute? Yes, Nancy. Thank you.
Well, I want to ask the tough question, because you've been giving so many good ideas of things to do, and I've been taking notes. I can't tell whether my husband's going to be the caretaker or I'm going to be the caretaker. This month, he's sort of the caretaker. But as you said in the beginning, I'd rather do it myself. So I have elastic pants that I pull up and so forth. My question is, what are the worst mistakes? Because I feel like, since I don't have much patience, I am bound to do the worst mistakes. And what do I need to start really being conscious of now to try not to do? Because it's 21 mistakes and how to avoid them. And I'm thinking,
you know, the thing that comes up for me, and I don't know if this applies to your situation, but I think it may, is the way you communicate with each other. And the care that you give to each other. You know, I learned the words care partner versus caregiver, which is a popular term in the dementia community. You're really partnering with that person, you know, will give you the most success. Because if you're giving and giving, you're going to get tired. Even if you're receiving, you start to feel guilty. You know, there's so many emotions that come up. So what's important is to have the important conversations. You know, it could be just the right sentence that you say. How can I make your day better today, honey? What can I do to make your day better? You know, as opposed to maybe how can I help you? You don't want help. Sometimes we don't want help. But, oh, you can make my day better? Well, let's explore that a little bit. That sounds interesting.
I have another tough question, and because I'm thinking of somebody I care about, not as a caregiver. What about when it's a child and there are siblings in competition who don't particularly need significant care? Do you have any thoughts on how to help the ones who don't need care, but who actually do need care? Do you have any tips on how to balance that?
Well, that's a question I haven't gotten before. Thank you, Nancy. Is it about the individual that needs care is getting more attention than the other children? Yeah. Well, then just focus. What can we do together now that so-and-so is doing good? What can we do together? Or tell me about your day, some interaction so they don't feel like you're ignoring them or that they're not special. It's just engage with them in somehow. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. It's not my situation, but I do know a family where it's kind of a challenge right now. And
Let's all play together. I don't know what the situation is, but let's all do something together now. Let's go get ice cream comes to mind.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for your questions.
Yeah, that's great, Nancy. It's always nice to surprise the guest. So this just reminded me of another question, which I think is a really interesting one to consider how this plays out is, okay, so your husband or your wife, you know, your partner is falling into the need for more care and you're more and more helping them with what they need, and it's becoming more and more clear that you're going to need help. Then you reach out, you get somebody to help, and then that helper is like the star. And what happened to you? So how do you manage that? I mean, you get jealous, insecure, confused. I mean, a lot of emotions could come up, right? So what do you suggest around that?
Enjoy it. Enjoy that person is enjoying the other person's care and watch what they're doing and, you know, see if they're modeling something that might be useful and that works for you as well.
It gives you a break.
Yeah, you get a break. Yeah, it's great. I think it'd be wonderful. I had a few caregivers that mom really enjoyed and I'm like, this is my break time. This is really great. And one of them, I just always tell the story of my friend Wendy, who just adored my mother. And Wendy was a friend of mine for a long time before mom got sick. And she wanted to be involved in caring for her. And they used to sit and play games during the day. But my mom was a sore loser. And if she was losing too much, she would like throw the cards across the table and say, I don't want to play with you anymore. I don't like you. She would just go on ranting. And my friend Wendy would go, oh, May, you don't mean it. You love me. Her reaction was, and my mom would go, oh, okay, deal the cards. You know, so we can have conversations with people that really shift where they are emotionally. For Wendy, it just seemed natural. And, you know, she was just so sweet. And so she'd rub my mom's back and she'd say, oh, May, you don't mean it. Let me deal the cards. Let's keep playing. You know, she would make sure my mother won a few games. She would fix it or not say anything. And it made my mother feel better. And why not? You know, why not? There's too many rules that we follow that really just don't work. They don't make any sense. So we have to figure out what works and, you know, what's the best way to handle a situation. Some people are just very reactive. I've seen it firsthand that everything is about them and they just go into their ranting and arguing. I would say avoid arguing at all costs. Yeah. What you want to do is listen to people, listen to their opinion, and don't interrupt people when they're speaking. Let them say what's on their mind, and you will find being a good listener is very attractive to people and can shift their state. And I'll tell you how I learned that. I was a shy child and an introvert and didn't know how to have conversations with people. I was a great listener and people just said to me, gosh, I feel like I've known you all my life. You're such a great listener. And I'm like, this is working. Okay. I don't have to learn how to talk to people. I'll just listen. But that's how I got interested in learning about communication and strategies. And I was like, you know, I was young then. Well, I have to learn how to communicate with people. I'll study. Listening is very powerful. So Nancy, listen to your husband. Say, is there anything else? Anything else? Okay, great. Now you want to hear what I have to say? No, he won't.
That was wonderful. Thank you.
You've become a great listener with your husband, Nancy. Daphne, you flashed your hand up briefly. Did you have something else there?
Something okay. That you were saying, Lynn, about what happens when a caregiver, let's say, steps into a family situation and it's hard on the other partner. And I just remember witnessing this with my mom when my dad needed a caregiver that wasn't my mom near the end. And he began to share things with her that mom felt it was hard because he wasn't sharing them with her. And I realized how important it is, the role of somebody who comes in to be a support and a carer who has no history with that person, and they can become a safe place for that individual to open up and share things they may never have before. So it's really then it was my mom who needed the support to just be present to her so that dad could kind of liberate some things with someone who was virtually a stranger, but because he didn't need to care about her in the way that he was caring about my mom, you know, it just becomes very complex. And, you know, as you say, Tony, just that real deep listening at that point. But, you know, mom was going through all of her heartbreak, her exhaustion. She was an elder at the time being a caregiver. But I really see, and I remember this when I did hospice work, the value of the stranger who can come in and fill a particular peace in the community where it's safe to share things that you might not. So it's a very liberating experience for the one who's needing care to have that person. Anyway,
that's outstanding. Very good contribution. Thank you.
Beautiful comment. You know, there's also when a parent, like when my father, he lived into his 90s, and I'm so grateful that he lived long enough that we could have conversations still. And one of the things that happened was that I was driving us more, and he wanted to go down one street, and it was major construction. Like, there was no point in going down that way, but he really wanted to. And I said, well, no, we're going this way. And he just lost it, you know? And it's like, and then I said, well, you know, we don't have to go out, you know? Like, and then we talked about it the next day because we didn't talk about it. We went out and had supper. We didn't talk about what had just happened. And so anyway, we talked about it the next day, and it turned out that he was the youngest. You know, he had a sister a few years older, and then a brother 10 years older, and his older sister would be bossing him around all the time. And he'd never really talked about how the effect of that, you know, and how he would get triggered, basically. Mm-hmm. Yes, we're at the top of the hour. Thank you so much, Nancy, for joining us. And Jessica, I'll be following up with everybody. And Theda, is that how you say your name?
Yeah.
Hi. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Theda and Wade.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Daphne.
Thank you so much. If there's anything else anybody wants to contribute,
I'll just say go to Amazon.com and buy the book. Or the ebook is $1.99. If you like reading on your computer.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you so much, Tony, for joining us today. It's just been awesome. It's a special launch day. This is the official launch day with Spotlight Publishing House. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Lynn enjoyed working with me so much. It was unbelievable how much fun she had working with me. This is really great. Of course, I told her if it wasn't fun, we're not doing it. It has to all be fun. And it has been. There was very little stress. We worked well together, and we created a really good product with Teresa, everybody. Tanya helped in. Dennis helped as well. That was my people, my team.
Yeah, congratulations on your team and Junie Swadron as well, your writing coach, who I happen to know.
Writing coach, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And actually, you reminded me that when we first met, we first talked after being referred through Spotlight, that you said that. You said, you know, oh, I'm going to be traveling. I have some health issues. It's got to be fun. And it was like, I was going, okay, well, this is going to be a ride. And it's so nice. nice to get to this day, and we've had such a great time. And anytime there was something just not feeling that fun, we were right all over that as to how we could shift that. So I really appreciate the experience with you and Teresa and Becky at Spotlight. It's just so great to get to September 20th. September 20th, 2023 seemed like so far away. And so it's a very special time to show up today. I'm super stoked. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's a big event. Well, thanks so much, Lynn.
Thanks for hosting, Lynn. Thanks, Tony. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, one and all.
Thanks, everybody, for being here.
"21 Mistakes Caregivers Make and How to Avoid Them: Solutions and Strategies to Reduce Stress and Increase Happiness." Tony Claire Gittles. Congratulations, Tony, on the launch day of your awesome book, Heart of Caregiving.com.